And welcome again to Back to the Future, that sometime podcast that looks at the people, the products, and the ideas that are shaping tomorrow. My name is Martin Raymond, and today we're talking networks with the supreme networker in chief herself, Victoria Stoyanova. Victoria, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. Always a pleasure to talk to you and your team.
Oh, listen, I remember interviewing you when I was researching the background to my current masterclass series on strategic networking. That's my quick plug there. And I remember thinking, this woman pretty much knows everything about networking. And in fact, I remember speaking to somebody who said, look, she is more connected than Clapham Junction on steroids. I was going, wow, okay. So just tell me a bit about your job and what you do and why you could possibly be the Clapham Junction on steroids.
Well, I have never heard this one before. Thank you. I'm saving that. My work is all about seeing connections between people, ideas, ecosystems, and trying to create value on both sides. I really get a lot of pleasure from seeing opportunities that can benefit different groups of people. I love being a translator between different worlds, between a tech world and an academia world, or designers and scientists. It gets really exciting when you can be a person that connects the dots.
So yeah, I guess when I was speaking to you, remember you were talking about all of these overlaps and all of these lines and all of these different sectors that seem to coalesce in your head, and also I guess in your the equivalent of your black book. And one of the authors I did a brief interview with, who had published a book called Friend of a Friend, that's probably him sending me a little text there in the background. This is David Burkus. He said that you're a bit like a super connector or a super networker. Do you think that's a fair description of what you do?
I wouldn't describe it that way, because I would say that I just really care about knowing what's happening, what is the latest news in a certain ecosystem, what do people care about, and it's more about being helpful and supportive than connecting for the connecting sake. But because I've been in so many different worlds over the last decade, I do tend to know people in a lot of different spaces. Right. So I guess, yeah, we can say that.
So you've got a lot of different areas that you're plugged into. It's still about people and connecting with people, because I always think when people think about networking, they see it in a much more corporate sense. And one of the things you said to me when I was asking you to define networking, you said it's collaborations that are done without the expectation of receiving. And that struck me as being quite profound, because a lot of people who network see it as about advantage, see it as about connecting with a view to gain something. And if, I guess, those things aren't involved in it, they would say, what's the point and benefit of networking?
Right. I think networking is a way of meeting new people, right? So that gives an opportunity to build new relationships, to broaden your knowledge of an industry or a topic that you care about, and to share and discover opportunities. But now what makes a good way of doing this versus a not so good one is exactly that around it can't be extractive. It needs to be generative. So I feel like if your focus is around how can you create value for someone else and give first, then you're a lot more likely to receive at some point in time. But it's not a transaction. It's not an equal interaction. It is a lot more about being curious and really interested in how can you be helping another person.
Right. So there is really a return on it. It's just not that kind of obvious expectant return that people probably consider they should get when it's a business type network activity.
Yeah. And if you think about it, we tend to work with people we like and help people we enjoy the energy of. So the more people you interact with and build a wider network around you, the more at some point you can, you know, ask for help as well. But it's
probably reciprocity in that sense. But if you're giving on a regular basis in terms of helping, knowledge, innovation, that there's a natural compulsion for the person you're giving to just want to give stuff back in return. So it's that sense of investment rather than, well, if I help you on this kind of business transaction, you're going to help me on it, which to me sounds like, and this is some of the things I discovered in the research. There was a paper called The Contaminating Effects of Building Ties, you know, how networks can make us feel dirty. And one of the things they discovered is that when they chatted to people, even using the word networking, they instantly felt a bit grubby. You know, they were thinking about sweaty palms, those kind of swiveling, checking to see who's behind the next person or go and talk to them, you know, greasy business cards. And they said, once you see networking in that sense, you're not just nervous about it. It becomes a kind of thing that worries you to actually feel that you're part of a networking community.
Yes, and I think there's something about the term is so tainted by its business history, a world where business is transactional and boring, and it involves, you know, benefiting from people in a cold way without wanting to help them in any way. So the heritage of the word is quite tainted. But of course, it's a very different way to look at it now. And I think that's why we've seen such a big rise from networking to community, because it just sounds better. But in a lot of ways, it is about the same thing. When a space like a co-working space says, join our vibrant community of like-minded people. What they all say is come and meet great people, aka network here. But they're just not using that term anymore because it is associated with a more traditional business world that creative industries wants to differentiate from.
I mean, it's interesting when you say that, because when I looked at the same research and corresponding research, when you talked about networking in terms of friendships, for example, in terms of communities, collaboration, conversation, suddenly people had really positive, if not very warm views about networking. So almost by changing the language, and I guess the structure of traditional versus new approaches, people are going, wow, okay, I want to be part of that thing. So it's that kind of how you see networking when you both do it and when you're defining it and explaining it to other people.
Yeah, I think a lot more about it in terms of being actively part of a community, and you can have many different communities you're a part of. And so you can meet other interesting people through this community because it's quite exponential. But it's different than wanting to have a very specific answer to a question, a very specific kind of contact. And I think that's when a community is more a space where you are with people who share your values, who probably share your goals or your activities. And so you naturally want to help them and they naturally want to help you. And it's a lot more safe because there's a lot of trust. So the same way that we evolved in tribes where you couldn't do anything too crazy because then you're removed from the tribe and that's the worst thing that can happen to you. In a similar way, in a defined community, everybody knows. You assume that people are givers and that this is a shared belief that is practiced. And as soon as somebody is acting in a different way, well, everybody knows about it. Yeah. So it is actually trust brings more trust. So the more trust you put in the network, the trust grows.
Yeah, interesting. Because you have to your point about givers, that three types of people in the network, the giver, the taker, and the matcher. And again, when I was looking at research with that, it was quite fascinating because givers, you know, they're people who are naturally generous, but they were saying that if you gave too much because of takers, you ended up exhausting yourself. And in fact, a lot of givers ended up over time suffering from burnout and equivalent kind of syndromes. And they said the best kind of person in the network was also a matcher. So a giver gives and a matcher gives, but also refuses to give if they see people taking too much. So they're also spotting the taker in the network. So that's the bit that you need givers and you need matchers, but we need to avoid the takers, to your point. I mean, do you ever come across situations where you think, I'm just giving so much, I'm exhausted, and this person just keeps taking, and then you think, well, what do I do with it? What's your solution to dealing with the taker?
Oh, well, first of all, there's something around an 80-20 rule where you just know that there's something that might take you very little energy to do, like a quick introduction or a quick recommendation to something that might really help someone and drastically improve what they're trying to do. So whenever it's an easy ask, I always try to do that because I know it can be really helpful. However, there are people who might always come with a request without ever spontaneously suggesting something to you. After a while, you can just put boundaries around that and say, oh, I don't have time for this, or I'm not the right person for this. And everybody knows who the takers are in communities, unfortunately.
Well, I guess also because communities speak. If it's again a community in the way that you were defining it, you have conversations and you're bumping into people and you're chatting to them, and certain names keep coming up again and again. And one of the things I remember, we were chatting, you mentioned the word community, you talked about collaboration, you talked about creativity, conversation. I was thinking, I'm going to propose to you the Raymond Stoyanova 4C rules of effective networking. So I just think that you hit on it then. And when I was speaking to, and I think you probably know her, Anna Angelic, who did the book, The Business of Aspiration, she was saying that there is like a fifth rule or a fifth thing, which is about curation, the notion that we also need to curate our networks. And potentially, to your point about protecting those networks from people who are takers. I mean, do you actively consider how you're going to curate your network when, you're kind of setting up different networks across different businesses?
Yes, there is definitely an element of curation. It's also self-selecting. So because we navigate towards people that we find interesting and intriguing and we want to be more around them, that tends to be quite an organic thing. Of course, it might be that you're moving to a new city or you're changing career paths and you need to actively develop a new type of network. So the best way of doing that is around being a learner in new environments, attending a lot of events, asking questions, being very humble about the fact that you're trying to meet new people and trying to learn more about a certain area. And I think people are quite generous with that because we've all been there. We've all walked in these new shoes and trying to discover a new path. So, yes, I think there's something about generosity here as well. When you're curating a specific group around you, you're also quite generous with your time. Maybe you are trying to help these people more actively. Maybe you are supporting their work in a particular way. So. I think it works in that way, generous.
I think it's fascinating. You've hit on generosity as a kind of key tool and technique. And I guess behind that, you were saying about the notion of humility. And I think one of the key things about being humble in a network is listening. And I think, again, I remember you saying this, one of the key things is to be a good listener, because we always assume that networkers, being Irish, and I do this without even thinking, I talk a lot and I always worry, am I talking too much? And somebody said, well, that makes you a good network. And I was thinking, does it? And in fact, you've reminded me it doesn't. What makes good network? It'd be generous and listening. And I also think, if I looked at building a community, that's probably a good way to do it. So really, I wanted to dig a little further into your experiences, because some people listening will know you and will know about Creative Mornings, which was one of those things that when you were a designer or a creative or anybody who was involved in the creative industry, when you turned up to a new place or a new city, it was almost a go-to place to meet people and to commune with your own in some ways, but also to develop a network of supporting people around you. So I'm just wondering, when you were working at Creative Mornings, did you see it like that, or was it something else other than a place for support? Was it a place, for example, generating business? Could I have got business there?
For sure. So Creative Mornings is a very dear organization to me. It has chapters in more than 200 cities, and every chapter hosts a monthly event. And these events are themed. They invite amazing local speakers who talk about their careers, their craft. So it originally started with designers, but it's now a lot more broad and covers different topics. And so I run the London chapters as a volunteer for 7 years. It was never actually a job. It was more a kind of a passion project. But it was really, it's the biggest experiment in joy and human connection that I have ever been a part of, because there's so much generosity. You show up and there's 100 people there who are just as curious than you about meeting your friends and seeing what's happening in London, discovering new companies, hearing about a project they can be involved in. And so in the format, we always had a beautiful poetry or music piece to start with to anchor our guests. Then we had the speaker, and then we had something called community minutes, where people for 1 minute could come and share, I'm looking for a job and this is what I would like to have.
Or, I had no idea. Perfect. Sounds like a creative AA. I could come and kind of confess, but also get help.
Exactly. We've had a huge number of collaborations, businesses, love affairs, romances born in Creative Mornings. It's still very special. I'm just not that active in it anymore, but it's a very special place because creating a framework and a space where people can ask for what they're looking for without that being weird or shameful or, you know, feel in any way networking. Yeah. It's actually amazing because it's very human. It's all about, hey, I'm a human. I just moved here. That's what I can offer. And that's what I need help with. And everyone's like, great, how can I help you? But it's all about relationships.
Well, I was going to say that is a great thing about, once you understand relationships and partnerships and collaborations, there is a we involved rather than an I or a me. I mean, one of the things I discovered in one of the books I was reading on networking is that when you hear somebody use the word I and me continuously in a conversation, they are not just an ineffective networker, but they are also a hugely flagrant taker. And thirdly, which I found even more amusing, they are more likely or not to become a CEO because they have a shameless sense of their own importance. And in the kind of networking communities we're talking about, that's the last thing we need. So just not to connect shameless, fragrant CEO with big personalities. When you were working, when you finished with Creative Mornings, you then went on to work at Facebook, now called Meta, and you pretty much, I guess, headed up or started the Facebook / Meta ecosystems partners team. So what was that like in comparison to the previous types of communities you had established?
Well, Facebook / Meta is a very big company with a lot of structures, a lot of more traditional team formations, which was very new for me. I had never really had a proper job before or a proper team. So everything was very new. It was amazing to be a part of a pioneering team that serves the company mission. I think it's a once in a lifetime opportunity to wake up in the morning and say, I am here driving this company mission every day. So that was very special because the company had just changed the mission statement to be all about community and helping people create communities, but it wasn't a team that does that. So we were the first team, very small and mighty, all made of grassroots community organizers and amazing people, to come and think about what do people like us need? What do grassroots organizers and community organizers of all sorts, what do they need to succeed in this field that is quite different from its cousins, right? Because people we worked with were not really startups, not really NGOs. There were people who had seen a way of bringing people together, and all of a sudden they had a million people in their group, and they had never raised money or hired a team or managed a team. So there are all these different questions. So it was really amazing to create programs that directly support community builders in their experience. So we build accelerators and fellowships and all sorts of different programs. But for me, what was really lacking from the start, I really wanted to understand how are we going to work with the other ecosystem players? Because obviously, as a company, we're not the only ones who care about community. There's a lot of other institutions. There's a lot of academia. There is a lot of big businesses. How are we going to think about the journey of the community leader from the start? And what are the different milestones? And what do people need at different milestones? So with the ecosystem partnerships strategy, it was the first time that we sat down to think about, right, so who do we want to be friends with so that we accelerate this mission and we take it, we really move the needle instead of just doing our own little piece of it. And so, yeah, that was the start of something that is still growing and flourishing today.
So I guess if I'm listening to that, it sounds like you're applying purpose, because some networks are organic, you know, when you just kind of get together, it's a bit serendipitous, and out of that sense of randomness comes, you know, we've got a mission or we're going to think about things. I guess when I'm involved in networks, I always think, before I start, what's the purpose of the network? And then I sort of try to apply fairly loose criteria or frameworks around purpose. And it sounds like you probably had to do that because you are dealing with quite a massive brand. But within that, you're dealing with millions and millions and millions of micro communities who may not be actually touching each other at all. They might just be running parallel. So the thing I guess I'm looking at here is that while community at that level still seems to me, you know, very much about volume reach rather than a value reach, because I always think smaller communities are about value. Bigger ones are about followers and fans. And then I think of my smaller ones again about being collaborators and fellow creators. And then if I think about connections that benefit, you know, we've got what I call noisy connections, those big connections we make when we're reaching out to, you know, hundreds of thousands of people on Twitter or whatever. And then we have the smaller connections that benefit us because of knowledge and knowledge seekers. So when you were in that kind of the ecosystem, were you able to apply those smaller things to what's essentially a massive landscape of either opportunity or a massive landscape of an anonymity? I mean, how were you applying your skills in that kind of bigger playing field?
Oh, that's a great question. Thank you. I think there is something about keeping in mind that it's still all about relationships. So if you are going to build a partnership with another massive company, you need to understand what is it really that they need help with? What is the situation they're in? What is the context that you're operating in? So often we do things without considering the big macro context that we're operating in. And so when we get really familiar with what is going on and what is the precise context that we're working in, then we can make things that are truly valuable to our partners and the people that we're building these relationships with. And I love my friend Jen Bailey. She's amazing. And she says that relationships move at a speed of trust, but social change moves at the speed of relationships.
Oh, okay.
And so it's all about, if we really want to move the needle, we have to understand who do we need to partner with so that we collectively advance the field, we collectively move the needle. And to me, that's very important. And that's why it does require a lot of time and care to invest in these relationships. And this is why it's very different from the networking traditional sense of the word.
Yeah,
because it's not just about, can you do me a favor? I do one favor for you. It's like, no. How can we collectively think about aligning our goals in the long term so that we can really move the needle of this whole industry? And that's a very different question.
Wow. So I'm already hearing a philosophy coming through in the sense of, you know, the way you talk about relationships, the way you've developed your sense of community, you know, the way you've talked about being generous, being humble. And I kind of felt that these are the kind of things that make me belong to something. I want to be part of something. And then I went, wow, hang on a minute. You also founded the Institute of Belonging, which to me sounded, just for the title alone, so this is my take on from the outside looking in, you know, more human, personal, intimate, but also we're networking to the point about the Institute. It's about knowledge and learning and maybe kickstarting mutuality in a much different way. So what is it actually like, this the Institute of Belonging? What's it like on the inside looking out?
So This started as a project in the pandemic. First of all, sense making of what is happening to our sense of belonging and connection, right? It was so weird for all of us. We couldn't see our friends or hug our relatives or connect to the people that we love in a normal way. So I got really interested in what is going on. Let's take the pulse on this moment and let's talk about what is our experiences in different groups, but also what are different communities doing and how can we share some of the tools and resources and methods that we're building. Because this is still quite a new space, that obviously community is not new, it's the most ancient thing in the world, but all the tools around connection and belonging, there's still no one place where you can go to discover everything and to find what you need. So I thought the best I can do as someone who has a lot of tentacles in a lot of different places, I can put it all in one place so that my communities and friends and coworkers can find little bits that they find interesting. And maybe that would be useful for their own community. And so it started like this. There's, again, a lot of people who have met through it, who are now building businesses together and who have, you know, it has sparked a lot of interesting ideas. So, yeah, the goal is to keep sharing resources, tools, and insights around connection. And hopefully we can build a better sense of belonging in the world because we need it more than ever.
Oh, well, I mean, without it, I mean, it's the kind of thing that as soon as I heard the phrase, or, you know, as an institution, I go, wow, that's, you know, it's a bit like the school of life. You know, when you think about something that should be so obvious, and then when you read about it or go to it, you go, why hasn't somebody done this before? And that's what I thought, you know, the Institute of Belonging. I had in my head these great, you know, learned library networks, beautiful Elysian campuses, you know, this kind of sense of people chatting equitably. So like a scene from Star Trek where they meet the benevolent planet and everybody's looking like they've come from a kind of a Roman dress rehearsal and they all look very passive and very pleasant and very beautiful. So I'm thinking that was my vision of it. So already it gave me, which I love the idea that a title communicates a sensibility that can allow us to perhaps develop a more structured theory. So just thinking about taking it forward, what do you think will happen next? Now that we are entering potentially post-COVID, now that we are entering a workscape or a landscape, which is certainly more hybrid, and now that we're probably missing one of the things that everybody has talked about in this research after COVID is the missing the not just the human touch, but how the human touch benefits creativity, collaboration, culture. And I think to your early point about you know, energy, it really requires us to be present, maybe in a room, to belong, to have a different kind of energy that maybe businesses of the future now need to consider and think about and embrace.
I am really excited to see what happens. I'm a little bit nervous because we really have a crisis of belonging more than ever before. I currently am working on a project with the Q Collective, who have 11 agencies underneath them. They have IDEO and SI Partners and some other amazing companies. And so there is a big question around what is the sentiment in our group? And so what I found from doing a lot of research within these companies is that there is this new persona that is the depleted dreamer. There is something about people are exhausted. They want to connect, but they don't want to connect online. They don't want to connect on Zoom. And this, I obviously have a lot of friends who are working at like Google and Apple and all these big techie companies. And they're saying, you know what? I just don't care when I see people on Zoom. I just don't care. I just can't connect to that. And so we have to get really intentional about how are we providing spaces for connection that are not work, that are not about getting productive and getting things done, but that are purely around how are we connecting to people we would usually care about if we were in the same space with. But then it's very different when we actually know some people have started to work remotely for a company and that's it. They've never seen anyone in person for 2 years. So this requires an entirely new strategy around creating touch points and an opportunity to build relationships that are real, that are not superficial, that are not about doing some silly Zoom activity, but actually going deep and going human so that people can build relationships and keep them. Because when we look at data of, in terms of why do people stay at companies, they stay because they have a sense of community, they have a sense of belonging, they have friends. And so, yeah, we have a massive thing to work on collectively.
Well, I think it's, you know, it's so interesting you've hit on this, because one of the areas that people keep pointing out when you look at, you know, where ideas come from, where culture come from, where our notion of kind of values come from, people say, well, actually, it happens serendipitously. We bump into somebody, something, yeah, an idea, and suddenly that sparks and creates a conflagration. But it comes from an accidental moment. And hardly anybody has mentioned serendipity except you. When I spoke to you the first time, you said, look, one of the key things in a network, Martin, or one of the key things in community is serendipity. So I'd like you to just unpack that a little more for listeners who may not actually have considered the strategic role of serendipity in terms of ideas generation, company culture, personal development even.
Of course. I mean, when you think about serendipity in your daily life, you run into someone you know at the coffee shop, or you find a book that you had lost years ago and then you reread it and it was exactly the right time. There's just so much energy in serendipity. It brings joy, it brings excitement, and it connects you to something else. So it really sparks that part in the brain that is all about creating connection and creating a reward, which is very natural in our brain. We're wired for this. We're wired to see connections and opportunities. And so when we think about this in a work sense, yes, it's a lot more organic if you bump into someone in the office and maybe you overheard a conversation and maybe you can continue and see where that takes you. When we're in a completely remote setting, this doesn't happen organically. Nobody comes by your desk or overheard something or sees the book you're reading. So you need to be really intentional about how you're going to create serendipity. And the most amazing thing about it is that it's easy and it brings a lot of energy. It's joyful. It's exciting. So my tips for people are always around whenever you just feel a little spark of, hey, you know what? I wonder, dot, 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 go and explore that. So if you're on a Zoom call and somebody comments about an article or sends a report you like, follow that up. Say, hey, I really enjoyed that thing you sent. Would you like to have a short call about this? Then it's a lot more exciting than your usual calls with the usual people you work with. It's someone new and you have this genuine excitement to connect. So I do that all the time on Slack. If I see someone post an interesting thing, I'm like, hey, I really enjoy this thing you sent. Do you want to have a call? 100% of the time, people say, yes, yeah, that sounds absolutely amazing. Let's hop on a call. So getting really intentional about creating these moments of serendipity is key. And I think it's a personal responsibility for individuals to go and create that for themselves. But also it's a responsibility on companies to create these moments where serendipity can happen. Pair people one-on-one, create moments of fun one-on-one connection, have programs that, like, I don't know, mentorship schemes or group coaching, anything that brings people together is magical.
I mean, it's interesting because there was a piece I read ages and ages ago about an architect who designed buildings, but he also designed a imperfection into the lift system so that randomly the lift would fail or stall for a few moments on a floor just without any sense of anticipation or predictability. And what he had said, he did this because he realized that if you create a moment where people have to bond, i.e. we're stuck in the lift, or gosh, we're all going to use the stairs, we're going to have to talk. He said serendipity in itself creates vulnerability, and vulnerability leaves us open, and openness creates opportunity, and opportunity creates or leads to innovation. So I think you're absolutely hitting on the right thing. Most businesses still see serendipity as, you know, the coffee machine moment or the equivalent of bumping into somebody into, well, our foyers are no longer places we can bump into people because we're hardly in them. Coffee machine probably doesn't exist anymore because we're fearful it's going to spread COVID, you know, touching the cups and touching the coffee machine. So it's really interesting that you're picking up on it. I would love to continue talking about serendipity, but I'm just aware that we're running pretty much low on time, which is always fascinating because I really wasn't watching my clock and suddenly I've had my alert to say, Martin, you've got to end this now. But before we finish, I would just like you to think about the future for a moment, because the program is called normally Back to the Future, as in, you know, things that we've get right or get wrong. I'm going to ask you, as I always ask my guests, to tell me how you see the future based on your connectivity and your connections and the many communities that you're involved in. What does tomorrow look like in terms of how it could develop positively if we applied some of the rules that we've been talking about today?
I would love to see spaces where we can have more genuine connection, and just to that point of vulnerability that you were mentioning. I'm just reading Mark Brackett's new book, Permission to Feel, He says something around the currency of relationships is emotional expression. So the more we can create spaces for genuine emotional expression, the more we can build relationships at scale. And I think that's a key for the future. And I think there is also a lot of opportunity for physical spaces to come back, but in different forms. I'm really excited to see what are the future hubs, community spaces being reinvented, where different businesses come together and people can learn more about how to build better relationships and connections and things like that. So I really, I'm a big believer in person, and I don't think real life is going anywhere. Yeah. So I'd love to see a more smart way to rethink about how are we building connection in person. Maybe there's something about people who are working remotely, but they're still in the same city, some of them. What is that way of connecting and interacting? So I'm very curious about that. And just in general, learning more about relationships, something like relationship schools. I want to see more investment and taking seriously the way that we build relationships with each other.
Perfect. I mean, I'm so with you on this, because I do think, you know, we have, certainly at the Future Board, we have a talent team rather than, you know, HR. We look at well-being days rather than sickness days. We look at the, you know, why come to an office? Not you should be there. We always say, what is, you know, so serendipity, culture, random connections, all of these things, which I think increasingly will become standard rather than a value adds or attempts to lure us back to the office or the city or whatever. All things being equal, why would we want to go to places that we have spent our lives avoiding, i.e. the office, the city, whatever, whatever. So I think there is a time reinvention, and there's a time, I think, again, to relook at how community is defined, and to your point about how we, I guess, harness the emotions of community to make a world different and more positive. And Victoria, as always, a pleasure to chat to you, and thank you again for joining us. Just for anybody who's listening who wants to speak to you directly, they can speak to you on or send you a note, a hello or a serendipitous encounter at hello@victoria.works, or you can, my favorite term here, the instituteofbelonging.com, and contact you through that, or find out more about your work, your thinking, your reading on my latest, this is my plug again, my latest strategic networking masterclass series, which you can find at thefuturelaboratory.com/academy. So I even love the word academy, because it's about learning and about knowledge. Victoria, thank you very much. Until the next time, let's keep looking, keep listening, keep learning, and keep asking what's new and what's next.